This is Sportscaster.com's Open Mic with Johnny Kane on 760 WJR, featuring sports commentary and stories brought to you by the most compelling rising stars in sports broadcasting. Here's your host, Johnny Kane.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this week's show. It is Wednesday, December the 3rd. One of my favorite parts about Open Mic is hearing from so many new voices, and you'll hear quite a few on today's show. The idea of Sportscaster, of course, is to provide aspiring broadcasters a lane, you know, a place where they can be heard. And our first guest today is a young man from Grosse Pointe South High School. His name is Robert Hindelang. Robert, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, it's good to have you on. I know you've had some experience doing some things through Sportscaster, including working on Drive to the Game. What was that experience like for you on a Friday night?
It was a really cool experience. Our team was on a win streak there. We were probably playing the best we played all season. It was a good game, and it was a great learning experience and one of the best experiences of my life.
That's great, man. I love to hear that, you know. Seriously. You know, I love working in sports, I mean, more than anything in the world. And for you, when did you know, you know, hey, I really want to pursue this as something I want to do through high school and maybe beyond?
I'd say I was like 5 or 6. I found sports and I started watching it more closely. And then around 8, I was like, these guys who call the game, they can know all the players and call the game and get paid and go to all the games. I'm like, that's what I want to do. That sounds amazing. And it's been one of my favorite things to do. And I try to get as much information about sports and learn as much as I can daily.
Yeah, that's great, man. I was kind of the same too. You know, I remember being younger and just thinking like, man, we could do this for a living. That would be, even if they didn't pay us, you know, that'd be okay too. But I guess it works a little bit better when you do actually have a reward at the end. What kinds of things have you been able to do at Grosse Pointe South? Like what type of programs do they have?
So I've been able to do the school news here at South. I do the sports section on it most days a week, and I've done the weather a couple of times. I'm hopefully going to call some of the basketball games this year.
Nice. That'll be great. You're only a sophomore, right?
Yes.
What would you say, like, in a perfect world, once you graduate high school, what would you like to do after that?
Probably call golf. Maybe, like, take Jim Nance's job. I've love golf. I started playing a couple of years ago. I'm on the golf team here at South, and that's one of my dreams to someday call golf or baseball.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah, golf is a very unique sport in calling it, especially when you listen to like big tournaments. Even I like listening to golf on the radio, even how they go to the different towers. And then you mentioned baseball. I love baseball. I think it's the greatest sport we have. I also love golf too, but baseball is fabulous. You're a big Tigers fan. Give me just kind of a sense of, because I've saw you at a couple games. How long have you been following the Tigers, and can we win it all next year?
Yeah, I've been following the Tigers my entire life. Baseball was my first love. I went to the World Series when I was 2 back in 2012. Yeah. And I think if we get a couple more arms, especially with Jackson Jobe going to be out a while and the uncertainty at Scooble, if we can get 1 or 2 quality arms and maybe another arm in the bullpen, just with the way the bullpen ended last year, maybe another bat, I think that can really help. And I think we need some more solid infielding, probably solid third baseman with the bat.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Well, very good, man. I'm glad we got to catch up on the show. And I wish you all the best as you go through the rest of your school year. And then obviously in the years ahead, having you involved in Sportscaster. And I'm glad we got a chance to catch up.
Thank you. Me too.
All right. Robert Hindelang, sophomore there at Grosse Pointe South High School, an aspiring sports broadcaster getting his start here on Open Mic, making his debut. I want to get to our next guest now, Taryn Fritching, who's been on our show in the past. Taryn's another high school student from Troy Athens High School, and she offers a commentary on the fastest growing sports in the world. Now, I can guess the first, but pretty fascinating to hear the top three.
Hey everyone, I'm Taryn Fritching, and today we're diving into something you might not hear much about in the hallways, but probably see all over TikTok and parks around Michigan, the fastest growing sports in the world. A new article from Earth Golf called The 10 Fastest Growing Sports, Why They're Booming and What's Next, says these sports are exploding because they're easy to start, fun to play, and way more social than traditional sports like football or baseball. But what's cool is most of these new sports actually have a long history. Let's start with the biggest one, pickleball. Pickleball actually dates back to 1965 when three dads, Joel Pritchard, Bill Bell, and Barney McCollum, invented it on Bainbridge Island, Washington. They were just trying to keep their kids busy during the summer using ping pong paddles and a wiffle ball. Fast forward almost 60 years, and it's now America's fastest growing sport. There are over 19.8 million players in the U.S. There are now 68,000 plus courts nationwide, and new ones are popping up in schools and rec centers everywhere. What's the driving boom? Accessibility. It's simple to learn, low impact, and can be played indoors or outdoors. In other words, it's perfect for all ages. And lately, more high school students are playing competitively, not just recreationally. Next up, paddle. You might have seen it on social media. It looks like tennis, but it's played on a smaller court surrounded by glass walls. It started in Mexico in 1969 when a businessman named Enrique Corsurea added walls to his home tennis court. From there, it took off in Spain and Argentina, and now it's spreading throughout the U.S. Right now, there are about 25 million paddle players worldwide, and experts predict a 26% annual growth rate for new courts through 2025. In the U.S. alone, paddle has grown from fewer than 30 courts in 2020 to over 600 by 2024. That's a 20 times jump in just a few years. What makes it special? It's easy to play, fast-paced, and extremely social. The perfect blend for younger athletes who like action but want a sport that feels more inclusive and community-driven. Now, not all fast-growing sports are casual. Some are just more intense. Mixed martial arts, otherwise known as MMA, including jiu-jitsu and kickboxing, has exploded in popularity thanks to UFC fighters like Conor McGregor and Amanda Nunes. MMA began developing as a modern sport in the 1990s, combining wrestling, boxing, and martial arts disciplines. Since the 2010s, the global MMA market has more than tripled, and youth training programs are popping up across Michigan. It's not just about fighting, it's about discipline, fitness, and mental strength. So what does all this mean for us, high school students and athletes? These sports are proof that athletic trends are changing fast. Young players don't have to stick to the big four, football, basketball, baseball, and hockey. Schools that add sports like pickleball or paddle early could become leaders in new athletic programs. Students who try something new might discover skills that translate to college opportunities later. And coaches who stay open to these trends can build inclusive teams that bring more students into sports. So when you look at the future of sports, remember this. The next big thing might not be something new. It might just be something rediscovered. From backyards in the 60s to national tournaments today, these sports prove that passion and creativity can make anything grow. Which of these fast-growing sports, pickleball, paddle, or maybe even MMA, do you think could become the next big high school or college sport in Michigan?
Great question, Taryn, and great commentary. Pickleball is on my list. I have quite a few friends who have taken up the sport. Paddle, I could see getting into as well. As for MMA, I think that's more of a spectator sport for me anyhow. That was Taryn Fritching from Troy Athens High School. You know, one of the biggest sports stories right now has been the coaching carousel in college football. Some of the bigger names in the Power Four have made coaching changes despite the current season still going on. The biggest certainly being Lane Kiffin leaving Ole Miss, joining LSU. That's all made possible when LSU parted ways with Brian Kelly a bit earlier. That was really the first domino that needed to fall. But University of Florida has made a change. Auburn, Arkansas, Virginia Tech, Michigan State, a lot of schools involved. And that's kind of what happens at this point in the calendar. I'm here to help clarify as one of our newest sportscaster.com contributors, JC Fox. He's a freshman sports media major at Mississippi College down in Clinton, Mississippi. And he's a proud graduate of Oakdale Academy in Waterford, Michigan. JC Fox, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yes, a lot of changes in college football this year. especially with coaches, and as coaches have to learn to adjust to the new format with NIL, the transfer portal, there's a lot more pressure than there has previously been. And some longtime coaches who were recognizable faces have been fired. Some Group of Five coaches gained upgraded to Power Five jobs, especially in the SEC. And then a little bit of some shifting loyalties within conferences were seen as well. And one of the coaching changes, the aspects of it rather, that really stood out to me were some faces of brands who are out of their jobs in 2025, Mike Gundy and James Franklin. Mike Gundy, the Oklahoma State coach, spent 21 seasons in Stillwater. He has the school record, 170 wins, and he had a 3-9 campaign last year, 1-2 to start this year, lost to Tulsa at the beginning of the year, and he was let go. Someone who's synonymous with Oklahoma State Cowboy football. And then James Franklin, who was at Penn State for 12 seasons. He had 104 wins with the Nittany Lions and had them in the postseason top 25 seven times, but he just couldn't win the big game at Penn State, so they let him go. And while Mike Gundy is still looking for a job, James Franklin was hired at Virginia Tech, and he was brought in to bring a winning culture, championship level success back to that football program, as the Hokies have not won the ACC since 2017 and have just one bowl win since 2017. So they're looking for James Franklin to bring success back to the football field at Virginia Tech. And then there are also some Group of Five coaches getting their first crack at SEC head coaching experience. Ryan Silverfield going from Memphis to Arkansas, John Summerall going from Tulane to Florida, and then Alex Golish going from South Florida to Auburn. It is really a volatile landscape right now in the SEC conference, and that's shown by the whole Lane Kiffin saga that happened this past week. Kiffin led the Ole Miss Rebels to a 38-19 win in the Egg Bowl over Mississippi State. And after that game, the wait for his decision really began. A lot of people thought maybe Florida early on, and then Florida seemed to drop out of the Kiffin sweepstakes, if you will. LSU came out as the top dog to win over Kiffin, and it was really a 48-hour wait to see what his decision would be. A lot of meetings, a lot of drama. He's staying, he's leaving, he wants this, he wants that. So it was really an interesting time in Oxford and Baton Rouge. And one Ole Miss fan I talked to, once it was announced that Kiffin would leave Ole Miss and he'd be the next head coach of the LSU Tigers, said, "You can't blame him for taking the job. We're just very frustrated with the way he went about it." But in Oxford, there's still hope. Pete Golding was promoted from the defensive coordinator to the permanent head coach this past weekend. And the Rebels should be in the college football playoff. They had a very impressive season, almost made to the SEC championship game. So it'll be interesting to watch that story through December and January. And then for me, probably the most intriguing story of this college football coaching carousel, if you will, is Jonathan Smith out at Michigan State, Pat Fitzgerald in. The former Northwestern coach, Pat Fitzgerald, was fired in 2023 from the Wildcats, but he has 65 Big Ten wins on his resume. He led his Wildcat teams to the Big Ten championship game a couple times. They had five appearances in the postseason top 25. He had a lot of success at Northwestern, and Pat Fitzgerald, more than anyone, knows how to do more with less. In the Big Ten, really, especially Michigan, is dominated by Michigan and then Ohio State for recruiting. So Pat Fitzgerald will have to battle with those two powerhouses in the recruiting scene, but he knows how to do it, and this move has prompted mixed emotions in the Spartans locker room and the Spartans fan base. One player said, quote, "Pat Fitzgerald is a home run hire. People might not realize it yet, but they will." And then another player commented saying, quote, "Love the Fitzgerald hire. MSU needs a coach who can build a program and establish a strong culture back in East Lansing. He's routinely done more with less end quote. And that's really what the story is here, more than less. How does that translate with Pat Fitzgerald? He's a coach who's willing to adapt and change and knows how to win. And it seems that the Michigan State locker room and their fan base are very excited for this hire. And even though there have been a lot of coaching changes, there were also a lot of coaches who were signed to massive extensions, as there were rumors floating around about would they get hired here, would they get hired there. Kurt Cignetti, Eli Drinkwitz, Clark Lee, Mike Elko, Matt Rhule, and a whole host of others were rumored for a lot of open jobs, but that earned them massive extensions at their school. So the pressure's on for them now to win and to keep the boosters happy. But as we look at all this, the question might be, why are there all these changes? Why does this feel so chaotic? And a couple reasons could be NIL pressure. And now it's boosters pressuring you and the athletic department. That has really changed college football. The transfer portal, the ability to keep players, retain them on your roster, but also recruit guys from other teams. And then still a little bit of conference movement stuff going on as conferences get bigger, teams have to cement their identity and find ways to win in conferences that are becoming harder and harder to win in. So if 2025 is any indication of the way coaching is going to be for the foreseeable future, there are a whole bunch of rapid changes, not just on the field, but in the sidelines, the recruiting offices, the boosters. And for fans, that means some uncertainty, some excitement, and maybe a few shockers. For players, especially those considering entering the transfer portal, it could ultimately reshape their collegiate career entirely.
Very well done, very well researched. And I'm with you. I feel like we're living in a stage, change is imminent, change is coming, but this is the way that it is right now. And it almost feels like there's such a flurry. There's so much investment involved. And I'm not talking about just like emotional investment, but like you mentioned, the boosters and the athletic programs and NIL, like everybody wants a cut of this stuff. And it's like, we need to win now more than ever. Like you got to win today, win recruiting, win the transfer portal, win your conference, win a national championship, win over the boosters. And the timeline for that, like you mentioned, Jonathan Smith at Michigan State, you know, used to be you get about 4 years to bring in your own recruits, develop and move. Now nobody has four-year recruits anymore. So like Kurt Cignetti is the unicorn because of what he's been able to do at Indiana, where he proved, hey, you can come into a place that's on, I think you would say, on a level of like a Michigan State in the Big Ten Conference. And he runs it back and puts an undefeated season together in year two after advancing to the playoff a year ago. But that probably, rather than saying, well, that's the expectation for all these other schools that you mentioned that have gone to a new coaching hire, you know, he's different. But it's just fascinating to me as we work through this thing and then, you know, how this is going to evolve in the college game and the calendar in years ahead. But this is the way that it is right now, and teams are capitalizing right now. I like the hire of Pat Fitzgerald at Michigan State. We'll see how it plays out, obviously. But obviously, if you can win at the Big Ten, which he's proven to do at a place like Northwestern, I think you'll do well in East Lansing. But to your point, JC, you know, it's one thing recruiting in the Chicago area in the backyard. And now you say, okay, now you get to East Lansing and you got to out recruit Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Indiana, and everybody else. You know, it'd be tough sledding for them, but I guess we'll just see how it all plays out. Very good, man. And I look forward to having you on the show a little bit farther down the line. Maybe we'll do, once we get into the middle of next college football season, we can reflect on some of these, the hires that have been made at the Auburns, Ole Misses, Arkansas, and Michigan States, and we'll reset.
Yes, it'll be very, very interesting to see how this all unfolds and what happens, especially next season.
All right, very good. He is J.C. Fox, Oakdale Academy graduate from Waterford, now down at Mississippi College in Clinton, Mississippi. Our next interview, I think you'll really like. This is a young man that I was fortunate to meet 10 years ago already at a Make-A-Wish event at the Palace of Auburn Hills. His name's Glenn Ratledge. He's from Brownstown Township, which is a Detroit suburb. And when Glenn was very little, 14 months old, he had his first unexplained seizure. And these seizures were continuous and they were life-threatening, especially being such a tender age. I mean, he was just a baby at the time. And he was diagnosed with tuberous sclerosis. And that's where benign tumors can grow in the brain or other organs in the body. In Glenn's case, it was the brain, and it brought on these epileptic seizures. Tuberous sclerosis is a lifelong condition, and it can cause developmental delays. Doctors monitored And then they managed the symptoms for some time until Glenn got into elementary school. And that was when his mom made a difficult decision of having him undergo brain surgery at Mott Children's Hospital in Ann Arbor. Neurosurgeon would remove the tumor with the hopes that it would eliminate the epilepsy, but at what cost? One of the main concerns was potentially Glenn losing his vision, but it was a risk they felt they had to take. So they took it. And you know what? Glenn did not lose his vision, and he has not had a seizure in almost 14 years. Glenn is now working as a locker room court assistant with the Detroit Pistons. Glenn Ratledge, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, bud, you remember the first time we met?
Yes, I do. November 17th, 2015, against Cleveland.
And how did we meet?
We were courtside, and we were on the first row, and you stopped by and was like, hey, we want to do a little interview real quick, and did it before the game.
Yeah. Thought you nailed it. Thought you nailed the interview that day, you know? So part of your story, it was a unique story that we had learned about at that time. For our listeners that are just getting to know you for the first time, what was it that brought us together and how you got connected with the Pistons?
Well, I was a Make-A-Wish kid and contacted the Pistons at the time, and they said, hey, they would like to do a Make-A-Wish for this kid, and they did it for me, and it was November 1st, 10 years ago, and I got to see practice and the players and coaches, and they invited me to a private practice to see what it's like, and they invited me to a game, and that's how me and you met.
That's how we met. And it was when you were very little, just over 1 year old, and then you went to University of Michigan Mott Children's Hospital for emergency surgery. I know you don't remember that time. Obviously, you've been able to tell that story a couple times now, but what have you been told? What are your memories of that experience of going through what at the time was, you know, a pretty serious surgery for you and for your family?
Yeah, well, at the time, we didn't know if I was going to see normally after the surgery. See my peripheral vision, like the side vision. It was a tough time.
And how old were you when you underwent your first surgery?
9 years old.
And since that surgery, so obviously you guys were very hopeful, scary point in time for sure. Since that time though, seizure free?
Yes, 15 years, knock on wood. It's impressive, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And as you mentioned, you know, with the risk of that surgery could cause potential issues with peripheral vision and I imagine a whole byproduct of things that could happen. Now, here we are all these years later, you're standing on the floor courtside every home game for the Detroit Pistons, rebounding for some of the biggest stars in the game. Could you ever have imagined at that time that you would be doing what you're doing now?
I honestly wouldn't. When I started, I was thinking like, am I really here? And it's like, I'm actually here doing my dream job and helping out, meet some new people and make new friends. And we all connect really well and became really close with the organization.
Yeah, I see it obviously every day when I'm there. I see that you have like, you develop a personal relationship with these guys. Obviously, you're there to help them get ready for the games. How did it come about from being a Make-A-Wish young person to have an opportunity to go see a game? How did it go from that to then being employed by the team? And now, like I said, now in your fifth season.
Well, after Make-A-Wish, I started talking to the equipment manager for like, say, 6 years on Instagram. We talked for a while and communicated for a couple years and got along really well. And he remembered when I was a Make-A-Wish kid and we stayed in touch over the years. And he offered me a job one day and said, hey, would you like to work for the Pistons? And I was like, yes, I would. And here I am.
Here you are.
Yeah.
The equipment manager, John Commodores, a great guy. And he's been at it for a long time. Every year that I've been there, this is my 12th season with the team, your fifth. Kong's been there. This is, his nickname is Kong.
Yeah.
He's been there longer than both of us combined. I know that much. How would you describe what your typical game day responsibilities are and how they've evolved into the responsibilities that you now have?
Well, when I'm at the games, I prepare the court, I set the balls up for the players and put whatever needs to get out, like during the game, like the pads or towels ready, and do some stuff on the court and during the game, I do like the towel job. So like when a player's done, I grab it and take it back to get some laundry and come back out and see if they need help with any more assistance.
Sure.
During the game, I bring some warm-up clothes. I take them with me and take them back to the locker room and put them on their seat.
Very cool. So you get the whole behind-the-scenes all-access pass.
Yeah.
Who would you say? I know you have a good relationship with Cade Cunningham, and I imagine all the guys, but are there a couple players when you think over the last couple of years that you've really gotten to know and gotten to like?
I have a lot of great relationships with the players. The great thing is we're all close, like a family.
I love it, man.
Cade, me and him get along really well, and I get along with all of them from the past and present.
Yeah, past and present. Obviously, the team's rolling right now. There are a lot of big Pistons fans out there. I know you're a fan through and through.
Yeah.
What's it been like being a part of, you know, look, 2 years ago, I know you remember this, but the Pistons set the NBA mark for 28 losses in a row. And I don't know that many people thought that this team was going to be this good this quickly since that time. How much fun has it been being a part of a winning organization, being a part of that atmosphere, you know, one of the highest attended NBA arenas in the league this year?
Well, from that time, it was like tough to tell because we all start off bad at the beginning of the year. Then injuries happened and that messed the chemistry up with the injuries and that made things not go well for the season. The following year, we gone to the playoffs with JB and the new crew and the new players and the young core we have. There's a lot of bright future in these players, you know.
I feel like they do. I feel like you do, too. I know that when you were going through everything that you had to go through as a young man, you've always had this positive outlook, right? A positive mindset. Where did that come from? And how easy or how difficult is it to maintain positivity when you're going through what to a lot of people would be a very difficult time?
Well, I just take it by day and I always try to like keep my mind happy and not get distracted. And I always stay busy on the stuff that I enjoy doing and staying active and try and put a smile on my face every day, you know, no matter what situation it is.
Well, you're always smiling every time I see you.
Yeah.
That's good. How important has it been, you know, you have a sister and obviously your mom, to have a support system like that, that you can lean on in tough times?
It's great having that support because they were always there and they still are. And it's still hard to believe that they've gone through the times that I've been through in the past and we've all been through it and things are a better outcome.
Yeah, that's everything, man. We're talking with Glenn Ratledge, who's one of the Pistons ball boys, also works heavily with the game day, part of the courtside crew, getting all the materials ready for the guys, in addition to rebounding for the pregame work. I know you yourself, Glenn, even though you're not in the NBA, you are in the NBA, but you're not an NBA player, but your love of the game, man, I've seen some clips. You can play. I know you play basketball all the time, whether it's raining, snowing, sleeting, shining, whatever. What are some of the benchmarks or some of the records that you've been able to accomplish?
Well, I would say the career points, but in three-pointers, say like how LeBron is at 50-plus. Right now, in three-pointers, I'm at 56,000-plus right now. So I still keep going when it's raining, little snow shower, and I go to the court once, three or four times a month. Depends how busy we are. I shoot three-pointers for 3 hours straight, running back and forth with no rebounder. Shooting, no rebounder, just running back and forth.
56,000 makes?
Yeah, 56,700.
Oh my
God. This past Thursday, so I made 500 more again.
In a day?
Yeah, in 3 hours.
Oh my gosh. When does it end?
Well,
100,000?
I would say probably maybe say 60,000, 70,000, you know. Then after that, go back to layups or something like that. You don't want to get bored doing the same thing, you know. Try something new again.
I understand. Well, that's good work ethic, you know? You got to stay with it. Shoot or shoot, you know?
Yes.
All right, lastly, and I appreciate you coming on the show, and I look forward to seeing you again, obviously, at all Pistons home games. You can look for Glenn Ratledge working the baseline there. When you look at a dream scenario for you, I always think in this position for me, you know, this is like my dream job, being able to cover the Detroit Pistons and be able to do it in the capacity that I do. What would be your advice for other younger people that may have aspirations and maybe who have gone through something at a point in time where they said, well, Glenn, that might not be realistic to be on an NBA court with balls flying and all that stuff based on a previous condition? And you said, well, we'll try it. But what would your advice be to others, you know, that aspire to do great things?
Well, I would say if they're going through the same situation like I did, is I just keep my head up and look day by day and just make sure I heal quick to get back to the stuff that I love doing and not letting it ruin my life. Just stay positive and look into the future, and you'll find something you'll enjoy doing when you recover from the process and the procedure.
Yeah, you'd be like Glenn Ratledge one day. One of my favorite guys, man. I appreciate you being on the show. Glenn Ratledge now in his fifth season working with the Detroit Pistons. A big part of the success over there and a big part of my life now that we've known each other for 10 years.
It's crazy to think.
It is crazy to think. And I look forward to the next 10.
Thanks for having me.
You got it, buddy. I'll see you at Little Caesars Arena sometime soon. And if you at home make it down to a Pistons game, keep your eyes peeled for Glenn, who'll be down there on the sidelines, on the baseline. And you can see him as well. What a great young guy. What a story. Glenn Ratledge, always rooting you on every step of the way, and very fortunate that our paths crossed when they did. We turn our attention to the court, one of the newest high school sports to be added as an official varsity sport here in the state of Michigan is boys volleyball. And for that story, we turn it over to a first-timer here on the show, Riley Lepick from Howell, Michigan. He's involved in the broadcasting program there on boys volleyball being added by the MHSAA.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Sportscasters Open Mic Radio. I'm Riley Lepick, and today we're talking about something big. For the first time in nearly 20 years, the MHSAA is officially adding a new sport to its lineup, and that sport, boys volleyball. That's right. Starting in the 2025-2026 school year, boys volleyball will officially become a sanctioned sport under the Michigan High School Athletic Association. It joins girls field hockey, which was just added this fall, as one of the newest MHSAA recognized sports since 2004. Let's take a quick look at the history of boys volleyball in Michigan. Even though girls volleyball has been a part of high school athletics for decades, boys volleyball has had a tougher road. The sport started to grow quietly in the 1970s and 1980s, mostly in southeast Michigan, where local clubs and high schools organized unofficial leagues. But because it wasn't recognized by the MHSAA, boys teams had to rely on volunteer coaches and pay-to-play models and limited access to gym space, often playing after the girls' teams were done for the night. Fast forward to today, and that passion never went away. According to the Michigan Boys Volleyball Coaches Association, there are now more than 70 high schools across the state that offer boys volleyball at the club level. And that number keeps growing every season. The popularity has especially taken off in Metro Detroit, Grand Rapids, and Ann Arbor. So, what does becoming an MHSAA sport actually mean? It means schools will now be able to compete for official state titles. It means athletes will have structured seasons, certified officials, and access to school funding. And maybe most importantly, it gives the sport credibility, the same recognition as basketball, football, or track. This move could also boost recruiting and scholarships in colleges in Michigan and across the Midwest, like Ball State, Lewis, and Purdue Fort Wayne. They have strong men's volleyball programs. High school players here will finally have a career path to play at the next level. Now, there's also Title IX angle to this. Title IX requires gender equality in school sports, meaning that opportunities for boys and girls must be balanced. In addition to boys volleyball, actually helps with that. For years, schools have added more girls' sports like wrestling and field hockey to meet equality requirements. But adding boys' volleyball doesn't tip the scales unfairly. It helps balance participation numbers in schools that already offer a large number of girls' teams. It's a part of an overall trend toward expanding access for both genders, not limiting it. In short, this is a win-win. It opens new doors for male athletes while maintaining fairness across the board. So here's the bottom line. Boys volleyball is finally stepping into the spotlight in Michigan after decades of being played in the shadows. It's getting the recognition it deserves, and for the players, this moment is long overdue. What do you think? Will boys volleyball take off in Michigan the way girls volleyball did decades ago? And could it be the next big high school sport to fill gyms every spring? I'm Riley Lepick, and this has been Open Mic Radio, where student voices keep the conversation alive in Michigan high school sports.
Way to go, Riley Lepick from Howell, Michigan. Want to thank him for his take on boys volleyball being added to the varsity list in the MHSAA. Also want to thank J.C. Fox from Mississippi College for the latest on the college football coaching carousel that is sweeping across the nation. Obviously, it has hit close to home here with Michigan State hiring Pat Fitzgerald. Want to thank Glenn Ratledge, my buddy from Brownstown Township, who's now working with the Detroit Pistons. Taryn Fritching from Troy Athens High School on the fastest growing sports in the world and how some of those sports may be coming into Michigan here as well. And Robert Hindelang from Grosse Pointe South High School. We covered a lot of ground today. Hope you took something out of it. And as always, we look forward to having you tuning in every Wednesday night here on Open Mic on WJR. We come on every week at 8 o'clock and we give a voice to the young sportscasters that are out walking among us. We look forward to seeing you again next week. Until then, Godspeed.